You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and this is being recorded the evening of the 20th of November. And of course, it's incumbent on me to talk about what happened Sunday the 17th. Reports have emerged, and I want to stress the word reports, that the administration, notice I don't say Joe Biden, approved Kiev's request to use longer-range missiles, specifically the ATACMS, to hit civilian targets inside Russia's borders. And allegedly, the French and the British did the same. Now, as far as I know, they haven't been used, although the media is very divided on this. Not that they would know one way or the other. The Jewish frontman in Ukraine says that it will happen. But as we'll see here in a minute, there's some problems with the full story. Problem, of course, is that President Putin said that anything like this would amount to the direct participation of NATO and the U.S. Although, you know, that seems to be an arbitrary line, since that's been the case for a very long time. We're also going to talk a little bit about the new nuclear doctrine, which I neglected to mention before. It's not as interesting as the media makes it out to be. Of course, they won't quote it, generally speaking. They claim to interpret it for you. And it partially, at least as far as the regime is concerned, it's why that they have approved the longer-range weapon systems. Now, there are enough writers that I respect that say the main reason for this is those controlling the Biden administration want to create a situation where Donald Trump, whose cabinet choices don't inspire any confidence, I don't know, except RFK maybe, I don't know, continues or even escalates this situation. Now, it was very unlikely that Donald Trump, who was as hard on Russia as anyone else, would ever cut Ukraine off. Because the minute that would happen, Russia could do as it pleased. And they're pretty much at that point now in the Ukrainian war. Casualties are non-existent. And that would hand the U.S. the biggest defeat since Afghanistan. Well, as I've said 100 times, it's the perception of Russia, the perception of the situation that matters. The media shapes policy. I've always said CNN is always on in every congressional office I've ever visited, despite or maybe even because of Russia's warnings on this. The point is to intensify as much as possible. You know, he gets inaugurated in a couple of months. They want him to inherit a much more difficult situation. In other words, pushing him into a more war-crazed stance. But as of now, all that's going to happen is that Russia will continue to do strikes against Ukrainian military targets or Western military targets, but no one's talking about bombing NATO whatsoever. Vladimir Putin is very much against unnecessary escalation, sometimes to a fault. He tends to want to avoid any kind of worst-case scenario. If, in fact, these weapons have been used, they've all been shot down, especially since, you know, strangely, that this is announced publicly, which is very interesting. And Ukraine has been doing similar things for some time. Now, Kiev and the U.S. have targeted the Kremlin, early warning systems, airfields, of course, the bridge over into Crimea, residential areas, and many other things. But everyone has a limit. There are some very good writers out there, pretty much the same ones I usually cite, and I'm doing the same here. Everyone has a limit. Russia could begin to massively increase, because it certainly has plenty of room. It doesn't have an empire, unlike the U.S. Can start a massive increase in bombing and missile strikes, forgetting about civilian casualties, which the minimization of which has been Putin's main policy since this started. Although I'd rather not see Russia take a page from Israel's playbook, but that may well be the case, and it's the fault of the U.S. and NATO. But this, of course, implies that any of these long-range weapons, in fact, hit something. Because they're fairly large, and we'll talk about this in a minute, they're pretty much easy to pick off. I guess the slogan that they're using is escalate to de-escalate. And people are connecting this to the Cuban Missile Crisis. There was nothing even remotely like this. Despite there being nuclear missiles in Turkey, which did border the USSR at the time, no one ever believed that they would be used. Here, you have the regime talking about it openly. But since the 17th, there's been a massive amount of panic deliberately unleashed. And there's a few of us who do question the credibility. Now, who broke the story? The New York Times, who can't be trusted on anything, especially where Jewish interests are concerned. Everyone else who's been writing on this has quoted the New York Times. But Putin has said it before, the Kremlin would consider NATO a party to the conflict if these were used. And of course, we're talking about the ATACMS, otherwise the MGM-140 Army Tactical Missile System. Range maxes out at 200 miles. Stocks are low. People forget that this system was discontinued. I think it was 2003, if not earlier. This system ultimately started in the early 80s. It was reactivated. There's a lot of problems with it. This is a Lockheed Martin product, but that's what we're talking about. Suspiciously, it's only unnamed U.S. officials. The authors here were Adam Entus, Eric Schmidt, and Julian Barnes. And they claim that Biden authorized the first use of these U.S.-supplied long-range missiles for strikes inside Russia. And of course, they also bring up the fact that it's against Russian and North Korean troops, which always makes me smile. Russia at present is using maybe at the maximum 15% of its military capacity. Now, this alleged decision, and I do question it either in terms of it being uttered, being realistic, or even being used. The New York Times says this came in response not so much to the nuclear doctrine, but the alleged use of North Korean troops. Again, that's only anonymous officials. You could make up whatever you want if you're the New York Times and you're willing to have zero integrity and talk about unnamed U.S. officials. But even the Jewish frontman, Zelensky, as of a couple of days ago, while he's talking about the use of these weapons, he said that, and I'm quoting him, many in the media are talking about the fact that we have received permission to take appropriate actions, but blows are not inflicted with words. Such things are not announced. The rockets will speak for themselves. But it's very ambivalent. The media, especially where Johnson's Law is concerned, and this is a huge place for it, can say what it wants, and it's very difficult to say otherwise. However, there's some basic and logical and policy issues here. Kiev uses the whore media constantly for their PR victories, and it's the only victories that they have, especially today where their front has long since collapsed, even with the artificial propping up. And as everyone knows, the New York Times is absolutely critical for the regime because it has this plastic prestige that it has never earned. Joe Biden himself was never quoted saying or approving anything. Not a single name of any of these U.S. officials was provided, at least initially. They don't even say, you know, unnamed. They just say U.S. officials over and over again. Now, anyone with a brain knows that there's no purpose in using North Korean troops, whether Kursk or otherwise. But what the New York Times said a few days ago is that while the Ukrainians were likely to use the missiles first against Russia and North Korean troops that threaten Ukrainian forces in Kursk, Mr. Biden could authorize them to use the weapons elsewhere. In other words, they don't know whether or not Biden said that the ATACMS can be used deeper within Russia, because the Kursk region doesn't fit into that category. It's a border area. And of course, the New York Times says that they're worried that the use of these missiles will prompt Putin to retaliate. Again, coming straight out of these anonymous officials. It also stated at the time that other anonymous U.S. officials said that these statements are overblown. This is a complete disaster, and I'm not the only one who's torn it apart. They have no verifiable sources. They have no documents. They don't even have a third-hand account, and certainly they don't have any names. It's speculation. And they don't even know if this threat is overblown or not. Making matters even worse and even more absurd, these same anonymous officials admit that this weapon system will have no connection to the front. It will have no connection to the awful genocidal losses of Ukrainian armed forces and their mercenaries at the front. So there are problems with this. They keep referring to North Korean troop concentrations. We all know why they're bringing that up. They talk about military equipment, logistics, ammunition depots, etc. Well, Russia's been hitting that in Ukraine, which are perfectly legitimate targets, but that's not what Kiev has been using these for. Now, I'm not sure how Kiev can know which unit is going to go into Kursk or anywhere else, or what is vital to Russian fighting capabilities. You even have Pentagon officials, again, this is the same article, who are opposed to this because, as I've mentioned, and other weapon systems too, the supplies are very low. And I want to get into that in greater detail. Now, the funny thing is that these authors say that the security advisors there in this administration today, quote, seized on a recent U.S. intelligence assessment that warned that Putin could respond to the use of long-range ATACMS on Russian soil by directing his military or spy agencies to retaliate potentially with lethal force against the U.S. and its European allies. That's a very odd thing to say, since why do you need an intelligence assessment to state the obvious? Not just stating the obvious, but something that he said many times, Putin has said many times. This is all over the news. The assessment, they say, warned of several possible Russian responses. Stepped up attacks of arson and sabotage training facilities, etc., etc. One of the authors I'm looking at says that it's pathetic how bad mainstream propaganda machine has become to stirring up rumors and the hyper breathless claims of World War III. It's conceivable that the regime is trying to test the response here. I mean, this is a lame duck administration. It really doesn't matter whether or not this is actually occurring. And I want to note, too, that American intelligence reconnaissance is almost completely absent from the Black Sea. So relaying, you know, this is a very complex process. You need real-time data to facilitate all of this. And as of right now, it's impossible. If you remember, a year ago, maybe more, I talked about the use of high-tech planes going very close to America's bizarre, you know, enemies, taking pictures for the sake of target selection and being chased away by either Russian or Chinese fighters. And the crews were instructed to come home and say how terrified they were of this. there's still a lot of problems. Even if it's true, there's still a lot of problems with it. But to say that this, you know, they talk about this intelligence assessment with this dour face, as if they've come up with something that everyone in the universe doesn't already know. I want to quote a guy named Will Shriver, who I think I've quoted before, and this is back in May when this issue first came up. And this is slightly out of my area of expertise, but probably no more. And he says this. We're talking about target selection, right? The final target selection can only be made by highly skilled specialists who rely on this reconnaissance data, technical reconnaissance data. Launching other systems, like the ATACMS, for example, also relies on spaceborne reconnaissance data. Targets are identified and automatically communicated to the relevant crews that may not even realize what they're putting in. A crew, maybe even a Ukrainian one, then puts the corresponding launch mission in. However, the mission is put together by representatives of NATO countries, and certainly not the Ukrainian military. This is a very complex process, and it's highly questionable, even if all of this is absolutely real, that it simply can't be done. Public ignorance, remember, is key to this Machiavellian strategy. I mean, people think that weapons win wars. Just sending arms to a country is sufficient. Everyone on the planet knows that the U.S. and NATO have been involved since day one. They were planning a massive invasion on New Russia, which Russia put a stop to. Putin didn't want this war. This had been building practically since the early 2000s. So these ATACMS, they're provided by the Americans. It's an American product, Lockheed product. They're manned. You could use a HIMARS base for this too. Experts and contractors from the U.S. They're linked to space data provided by the U.S. And of course, the same thing for targets on the ground. So this is a 100% American, at least, if not NATO, operation. So here you have a clear-cut American involvement that no one can deny. The fact that it may be located in Ukrainian soil, and even if there's a few Ukrainians who actually can pull it off, that doesn't change anything. Washington did it. But the constant talk about World War III is this sensationalism. I'm not saying it isn't a possibility. But they keep saying that this weapon system will have no material impact, that's a quote, on the outcome of a war which is already lost. Russian troops are advancing at the fastest pace, taking very few casualties. About the only thing that this would do is put Western assets at greater risk. Now, I don't know how much Joe Biden's aware of any of this. Let's just assume it's true. But this is the most it's going to do. It has nothing to do with the war as such. It has to do with harming Russian civilians. Because we know what Kiev has done. Kiev's policy from day one is to attack civilian targets, especially in Crimea, the dam, the bridge, the water supply. That has no bearing on the war at all. If anything, it would just steal Russian resolve. But as far as the SMO is concerned and the defeat of the Ukrainian and mercenary forces, it has no bearing. I guess the other thing it might do is force the buffer zone to be larger. Since you're talking about, I mean, 200 miles is a stretch. It's more like 150, 180. In other words, if this is done, Putin could take everything east of Dnieper and even the coastal regions of the Black Sea. I want to quote Shriver here again. This is from his Patiently Waiting to Strike. He says, when the realization of this objective draws nearer and nearer to being a fait accompli, we can be almost certain that the empire and its subservient European vassals will do something stupid and bring to pass some level of direct warfare between them and Russia. If and when that happens, then we will see the Russians finally move decisively against American ISR assets in the region, and they will do so with at least 2 full years of battlefield experience, careful observations of its weaknesses, and competent adaptation and innovation cultivated by that very analysis. And we have to be realistic. Donald Trump has just as much ability to do something stupid as Biden would. Both men, and certainly the cabinet picks of Donald Trump, have a very weak understanding of the origins of this conflict. You know, this blundering eagerness to impose a deal on the Russians that they will, of course, reject. This will be settled on Russia's terms. Washington has no bearing on any of it. It has nothing to do, nor is it the business of the Americans. And as one writer put it, Ukraine is going to be neutral or it's going to be obliterated. If Donald Trump thinks that Putin will allow the western part of Ukraine to be armed to the teeth and serve as a hostile outpost on Russia's border, he's simply deluded. I've mentioned already that some have claimed that this announcement, let's just assume it's true, has something to do with Kursk, but that's certainly not the case. The civilians have been long since pulled back, and when it was done, they really didn't do much. That army kept being supported, a lot of mercenaries there. But according to the New York Times, that's one of the things that caused this alleged approval. New York Times says, if the Russian assault on Ukrainian forces in Kursk succeeds, Kiev could end up having little to no Russian territory to offer Moscow in a trade. And the authors say Biden was swayed by concerns that the Russian assault force would be able to overwhelm Ukrainian troops in Kursk if they were not allowed to defend themselves with long-range weapons. Now this goes back to August. You remember what I said about that. They were doomed from the start, whoever they are. It's, you know, problematic if this had anything to do with the very recent approval. But you have to be deluded to think that any negotiations with Putin on actual Russian territory is even possible. Putin didn't want this war. I've said this a million times, but there is no military in existence that can defeat Russia in 2024, let alone on its own borders, which is very obvious. And as many writers have noted, of course, critics of the war have been banned from the airwaves. These armchair hacks wanting to teach Putin a lesson for some reason, but more importantly, they want to restore the, to say the least, vitiated image of the empire. Shriver says, I continue to be convinced the U.S. and NATO could never win and will never fight a war against Russia in Eastern Europe unless the empire at all costs death cult somehow seizes the reins of power, in which case it will become the biggest catastrophe in U.S. military history and very possibly result in civilization-ending nuclear war. For me, one of the most intriguing aspects of the unprecedented levels of propaganda beclouding the ongoing Russo-Ukrainian war is the incessant claim from the very beginning of the alleged strategic, tactical, and logistical ineptitude of the Russian military. He goes on to say, never mind the numerous reports from Western mercenaries and Foreign Legion volunteers who managed to escape back to their home countries after a very brief and terrifying tours of duty, all of whom relate similar accounts. They talk about encountering overwhelming firepower for the first time in their careers and soberly warning everyone, thinking of embarking on a safari to kill Russians, that it was nothing like Iraq, and they feel lucky to have made it out alive. And that comes from Shriver's article, The United States Could Not Win and Will Not Fight a War Against Russia. There are very few conscripts, as he also points out, among Russian forces in Ukraine. No one talks about any kind of demoralized battalion. Russian morale is very high. Ukrainian morale, by definition, what's been going on, they wouldn't be human if their morale was anything but abysmal. I've made the argument 100 times over the years, long before this war, how the regime could ever fight or risk its reputation in fighting Russia. They have no chance of victory. And among many others, I have 8 specific reasons. First of all, that there's no evidence that anything concerning NATO or the U.S., anything they make, is superior to that of Moscow. Secondly, given the nature of the empire, you could never concentrate sufficient resources, equipped and sustained, well-supplied men to defeat the Russians, again, in their own backyard. That could never happen. because the U.S. is an empire. And that's the third issue. They would have to pull men and material from all over the world, this massive network of overseas bases. A multipolar world would be almost a fait accompli at that point. But from 4 to 8, I've said this stuff many times. The U.S. doesn't have the men. They don't have the manpower. The U.S. is not an industrial power. It can't sustain a war of attrition. The American government doesn't have the money, and it certainly doesn't have the political will, except that high-level regime levels, and that's that. Even now, that's iffy. The U.S. is critically short of many weapon systems, high-tech and otherwise. And the obvious that Russia has never done anything to Americans, and the U.S. has no right to be there. But I don't believe for 2 seconds that anyone in the American military could, supply-wise, could sustain any kind of high-intensity conflict for more than a month. In preparation for this show, I read Alex Vershinin's The Return of Industrial Warfare, which actually he wrote in 2022. But I want to quote him here. It's still relevant, of course. The winner in a prolonged war between two near-peer powers is still based on which side has the strongest industrial base. A country must either have the manufacturing capacity to build massive quantities of ammunition or have other manufacturing industries that could be quickly converted to ammunition production. Unfortunately, the West no longer seems to have either. Presently, the U.S. is decreasing its artillery ammunition stockpiles. In 2020, artillery ammunition purchases decreased by 36%. In 2022, the plans to reduce expenditures on 155mm artillery rounds all the way down to $174 million. So as of the time he wrote this, the U.S. annual artillery production would last 10 days, maybe 2 weeks of combat in Ukraine of the type that we've seen. U.S. is certainly not the only country facing all of this, and I've said this for a very long time. And this doesn't include, when this was written, it doesn't include these commitments to Taiwan on the one hand or Israel on the other. If it's Israel versus Kiev, guess which side is getting the money and the weapons? The U.S. is neither a military or an industrial superpower. The sheer size of its so-called democratic empire makes it impossible to be able to concentrate forces anywhere. Lockheed Martin produces maybe 2,000 missiles a year. It might be able to expand it to 3,500 in a few years. Ukraine claims to use 500 Javelin missiles every day. The Russians have fired, in the first 6 months of the war, maybe 2,000 missiles. The U.S. purchases maybe 110 Prism, maybe 60 Tomahawks every year. So that in 3 months of combat, the first 3 months of this war, Russia burned through 4 times the U.S. annual missile production. And that comes from the Royal United Services Institute for Defense and Security Studies. And they, you know, these neocons will say stupid things like overwhelming American air power will win this war. He calls it the Call of Duty warrior. But I don't think anyone in the Pentagon believes that. Russian air defenses are the best in the world. And it would destroy any airstrikes. And the reason that me and many others say that it won't come down to this is because the regime's reputation would be shredded beyond repair if they were to, and they don't want to expose themselves to that. Not to mention what would happen if these failed airstrikes would cause massive counterstrikes. And Russia has very long-range weapons. They dominate hypersonic. Now, it's not just, you know, the staging areas in Poland and Romania, but all over the place, all over the Mediterranean at least. It's key to understand that there are 750 American military bases all over the planet. Very diluted military force. And if they had to pull back from some of these, other powers would fill the gap. So a war like this, remember, it wasn't that long ago. The Pentagon was talking about the older form of warfare like you had in World War I and World War II, that's over. This is going to be cyber warfare and everything else. And of course, that wasn't true. It was wishful thinking. The amount of ammunition the Russians have gone through, burned through, is way beyond what the U.S. ever forecasted. But the U.S. does not have the military industrial infrastructure for this, not even the potential of it. Now, as far as the political stuff, it's very hard for me to see Russia taking extreme measures before the inauguration. They want to wait and see, and they're not very optimistic about a Donald Trump presidency, but nothing could be worse than what we have. If it's true that these attacks have started and have just been shot down, I don't know if this is the long-range stuff, or these are long-range drones, or whatever it might be, the West has no idea what it's in for. A lame duck administration here, this is a terrible, because no one really has to take responsibility for it. Now, someone cited a Gallup poll in Ukraine that 52% of the population favor peace and only 38% want to fight on. But that's 27% in the eastern part of the country. Those actually that have been at the front lines, none of them want this to continue. Now, I don't believe the 52% figure because advocating peace in Ukraine leads to a prison sentence. So they're not going to answer American pollsters, honestly. So we know it's much higher than 52%. Now, I want to mention the change to the Russian nuclear doctrine. From what I could see, and I'm using the Sputnik's unofficial translation, I see 5 points. In other words, the question is, when can, morally, or when will Russia use nuclear weapons against its opponents? There are 5 things. The first is almost an obvious one. Reliable intelligence saying that Russia's enemies are preparing to use nuclear weapons against them. The second thing, if the enemy uses these kind of weapons against Russian assets outside of Russia, or a conventional attack sufficiently intense. Thirdly, Russia will use nuclear weapons if the relevant infrastructure in Russia were destroyed or damaged, such that a nuclear return fire would be hampered. Number 4, a conventional invasion of Russia that leads to critical sovereignty and or territorial integrity issues. And finally, the evidence of massive air attacks against Russia from her enemies. Now that, of course, seems very almost obvious. These things tend not to be publicized. Again, the approval of long-range missiles, as Zelensky himself said, isn't publicized. If anything, this is something to test Russian resolve. Now, of course, they say it's going to be used as the last resort. It's to deter a wide range of threats. But if a country attacks Russia in huge numbers with the backing of a foreign power, that foreign power is at war with Russia. Again, this is pretty obvious. Ukraine will no longer be used as NATO's proxy, period. The U.S. has declared war on Russia since I had my old website. But, you know, things that used to be off limits, as I mentioned, early warning systems, strategic airfields, nuclear power plants, of all things, civilian infrastructure. No, every single one of these has been attacked by Ukraine with NATO backing, and Russia has declined to respond dramatically. The only reason that Russia has hit, you know, the capital, Kyiv, and point west is to respond to this kind of thing. That wasn't a part of the initial plan. So the point is, Putin's new doctrine is to convey the range of threats that Russia faces and that the nuclear option is meant to deter them. So it's meant to influence the West. The first deputy chairman of the Russian Federation Council Committee on International Affairs, so this is a legislative position, his name is Vladimir Zabarov, says, permission for American missile strikes deep into Russia is an unprecedented step that will lead to the start of World War III, but Russia's response will be immediate. Well, as far as I know, there's been no response if this has actually taken place. And they use the word if a lot. If the Storm Shadow missiles or the ATACMS Russia will respond with nuclear arms in Ukraine. And of course, anyone who supplies these weapons to Ukraine will be considered direct participants. Europe then is facing a third world war. In what, the space of 120 years, three massive Europe-wide wars. This isn't fear-mongering, and I think we all know that. And this is being cheered for by the regime and by its media. Cheering for this, saying that this should have happened a long time ago, which is the regime's refrain here. This is, of course, a giant issue. And when it comes to places like Iran and Israel, well, we could see the $100 million donation from Miriam Adelson, the widow of Sheldon Adelson, a fanatical Zionist. The fact that Trump took that Fox News idiot, Peter Hegseth, who wants war with Iran, not to mention a man who's never had this kind of position before. He's totally untested. It's almost like these nominees are designed to satisfy people. This guy's never been in a position like that before. He was a host on Fox, but certainly a fanatical hawk when it comes to Iran. And there's a bunch of others, as we all know. Finally, I want to quote Paul Craig Roberts, which he wrote actually on the 18th of November. He says, as I pointed out, this long two and a half months gives the current administration the ability to commit the policies of the new president in directions to which he is opposed, meaning the lame duck period. In former times, when American politics was still civilized, the party in office was careful not to commit the president-elect to courses of action that the people had rejected. This political courtesy ceased when the Democrat Party became an ideological party determined to replace a merit-based society, redefined as racist, with a DEI privilege-based society based on race and gender, and a campaign to destroy the power and continuity of white, ethnic, heterosexual Americans. Thus, the open borders announcements from American corporations and the Secretary of Defense that there are too many white employees and military officers, and the hiring and promotion of white, Gentile, heterosexual males are now on hold. The whole point of this ridiculous Russiagate thing, this is, you know, the Russiagate was so idiotic, they still don't have a full explanation of what allegedly happened. Of course, it was created by the CIA, Justice, FBI, Hillary Clinton. The whore media went along with it. They had a million different versions of it. Not a shred of it is true. And the ridiculous claim that Trump and Vladimir Putin stole the election from Hillary, when we all know that Hillary stole the nomination from Bernie. The constant investigation and accusations, as stupid as they were, in his first term, he was not allowed to normalize relations with Russia. This war may never have happened had Russiagate not existed. This stuff, it might be funny in its stupidity, but it has real-world consequences. As I said in the beginning of this, claiming that Russia is you know, not America's equal and is incompetent militarily, lying about their losses early on in the war, leads to guys going over there thinking it's going to be no problem. Like Iraq, although American casualties in Iraq were far higher than reported. And even Obama stole Russian consular properties in San Francisco. The point of this announcement from the New York Times blocks any peaceful settlement of this Russo-Ukrainian conflict. But even if this, you know, is true, and plenty of people are saying it is, the fact that the initial New York Times article had all of those problems suggests to me that if it is true, it's only after the fact that it's true. There's a lot of reports on this, but it all goes back to that initial New York Times article, which doesn't mention anyone, including Biden, anything that he said or wrote. Putin is non-confrontational, but whenever he has set his mind to something, like in Syria, he's won. I still think Putin's going to wait and see what Donald Trump does. I'm sure the regime is going to come up with something like Russiagate. You know, this is, again, projection, stealing elections, which, you know, that, you know, the regime stole trying to steal 2016, tried to steal 2024, and succeeded in stealing 2020. That's why I think that anyone who would vote for this, someone like Harris, you know, if it was over 20% of the vote, it was rigged, unsuccessfully rigged. But these governments, the regime certainly, you know, the deep state is only part of the regime. The regime, first of all, is not just American, and is not just, it doesn't just rest on the state. It rests in places like Lockheed Martin or the New York Times, because they have to work together. The war can't be prosecuted and has not been prosecuted without whore media support and lies. We can only hope that so many of Trump's supporters, especially those who had been in the military before, they're sick and tired of losing wars. I hope that doesn't translate into, well, maybe we could win one now. Trump cannot lose this war unless he is able to achieve peace. Now, the initial report said that the 186 miles, well, that's the maximum range of this new weapon system that's being sent there. That's within the Kursk Oblast. But that's not deep in Russia whatsoever. So I'm not sure why they limited to, at most, 200 miles. Anyway, I've gone on enough. I think I've made my point here. There's so many problems with this, not just whether or not it actually occurred on Sunday, but whether it can actually be carried out and what the regime is actually capable of militarily against its single enemy. And that's Russia, and more specifically, the Russo-Chinese alliance. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.